Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. Hey, let him play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Mike Tomlin say, let's unleash hell in December. I say, let's unleash hell right now in May. Welcome to the very first episode of What's Hot, Behind the Steel Curtain's newest podcast, and I am pleased to bring it to you live tonight with my co-anchor, Chris Carter, also of Behind the Steel Curtain. My name is Brian Giardo, and once again, we are so happy to have you here for our inaugural show. We're thinking it's going to be Tuesday night from now on, but just the way the schedule played out, we decided to give it to you tonight on Wednesday. Once again, wherever you are out there listening, thank you so much for making our show a part of your night. Again, we have Chris Carter here from Behind the Steel Curtain. I'm Brian Giardo. We want to encourage you to call in. If you can call in, dial in at 347-850-8581. Again, the guest call in for tonight and every night, 347-850-8581. Don't be shy. Chris will answer the phone. Just tell him what you want to talk about, make it Steelers related, and we will get rolling. And without further ado, you know, I want to introduce Chris here in a second, but really the premise of this show is pretty much the title, What's Hot. We want to talk about what's hot around the NFL. We want to talk about the latest news. Obviously, this week it's the NFL draft, and something that just happened a few hours ago, the Wells Report, detailing what happened with Tom Brady in the deflated football. So we can't even put the 2014 football season to bed, but we'll hopefully have a conclusion to that soon. Also, I want to talk about the Steelers and, you know, news that's relevant to them that's new. That's going to be the bulk of our show, just talking about that, talking about what's new with the Pittsburgh Steelers last week, and then obviously looking ahead to once the season gets into things, looking into who they're going to be playing on Sunday and the ins and outs of that. Also, too, me and Chris talked last night, kind of pre-show conversation. We're both historical Pittsburgh Steeler guys, you know, like most Pittsburgh Steeler fans are.
Yes,
we love the history of the Steelers, and that's something that we're going to interject in all of our shows. So for any history buffs out there, for those that are a little novice to the Steelers' history and want to learn more, this is the place for you. So without further ado, let's welcome Chris into the show. And Chris, thanks again, too, for being a part of this with me. And let's give the readers a little bit more, the listeners, actually, a little bit more about yourself.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show. Hey, everyone who's listening, my name is Chris Carter. You may have heard me. I'm the producer, quote-unquote, for the Standard is the Standard show with Jeff and Lance and Neil, and he was doing it, too. I'm glad to be on the show. I was excited for Brian when he talked about his idea, and I'm glad to be able to co-host and talk a little bit more and just share a little bit more of my opinions and takes on things with the great fans of the Steeler Nation.
That's right. And a little bit about myself, I joined Behind the Steel Curtain back in January of 2014 when Neil Kulong was the editor. Neil got me on board, and I've been with it ever since. And last year was a great year, to be with Behind the Steel Curtain for the first time. The Steelers, they broke free. They were 8-8 two seasons in a row, and they were able to, win a division. They started 3-3 a little slow, but the defense started to get on track. We had a lot of young guys on the defensive end, and they started to show their stripes and earn their stripes a little bit as the season progressed. We also had the emergence of Le'Veon Bell, and after a fine rookie season, Le'Veon had an all-time season last year. I mean, he shattered Barry Foster's old record for most total yards for a Steelers running back, had over 2,000 all-purpose yards, was an all-pro, and was kind of the catalyst of our offense. It helped carry us into the playoffs, and we're hoping for more things in 2015. We're hoping for a healthy Le'Veon Bell, who we know is back after recovering from that injury he suffered in Week 17. And we just had the draft that unveiled. There's so much to talk about. There's so much that this show will hopefully bring to you. So when you're at the water cooler or the coffee stand in Starbucks or wherever, this show will help you stay up to date with the Steelers. We're not going to give you a lot of statistics. We're not going to give you a lot of hard facts. We just want to talk Steelers football. We want to talk about in the summer, in the winter, whenever. So this will be the place for you to do that. And once again, you can call in 347-850-8581 anytime. If you want to listen to this in a podcast, if you weren't able to listen, just write in the standard is the standard in your search engine on iTunes. Listen to it at any time in our archive podcast section. So without further ado, Chris, let's get this show rolling. What's hot?
All right.
The first topic is the Tom Brady situation with the deflated footballs. Well, obviously, everybody knows about it and what happened when they defeated the Colts handily in the AFC Championship game. It was later discovered that 11 of the 12 footballs Patriots used were deflated. And New England, as we know again, went on to win the Super Bowl. And I got to give Tom Brady credit. Obviously, Steelers fans, we're not fans of him. But he earned my respect for how he played near the end of that Super Bowl. I mean, really, the Seahawks, I think, you know, they lost that game just as much as New England won it. Obviously, with the last play and a couple other plays that unfolded before Brady's comeback. But you have to give Brady his props for really being, you know, spearheading New England's comeback in that game. But Chris, you know, the Wells report came out. They're saying that Brady had prior knowledge of the ball being deflated. They have hard physical evidence. With that being said, what do you think should happen with Tom Brady and going forward in terms of discipline from Roger Goodell in the NFL?
Well, to be honest, you got to read the report and go through the details. I posted an article on Behind the Steel Curtain earlier today just running through some of the bullet points that you could pull out from the 234-page report. You read some of the main information they got was just from security tapes that they were able to gather and from the text message communications between two employees for the Patriots. And from those, you see that there are several indications that they knew what they were doing. You see them talking about the guy who he's identified as McNally. McNally, he acknowledges that he calls himself a deflator. He says, I want two autographed footballs and a signed game-worn jersey from Tom Brady. I want money with the needle, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's several indications throughout the time, and even times where the other employee, I believe his name was Jastrzemski. Jastrzemski was the other employee who was listed in the text messages who they were able to confirm. And there were even times he even links Tom Brady. He's like, Tom told me that you're getting stressed out by, you know, the whole weighing of the ball thing. And there's just several indications through their communications and through security tapes that just show this is a shady deal and that this is definitely something that they were doing and trying to hide from people because there were several times in their communications you see, McNally jokes, I'm going to go to ESPN with this, and whether or not he was joking or not is another story. When I'm looking at this, to answer your question, I don't think that the Colts would have won had the Patriots not deflated the balls. I don't think that's the case. I do think it draws into question how often these balls were deflated throughout the season and how far this, you know, in closer games like the Ravens game the week prior, you know, were the balls deflated there because there were complaints in that game or their suspicions raised about the proper inflation of those footballs. There wasn't a full-out investigation, but, you know, it's now questionable were they doing this all season. And even if it didn't impact all their games, they were breaking the rules. If they were depressurizing this ball, my opinion, if you're intentionally breaking the rules and you're trying to cover it up, and when asked about it, Tom Brady acted like he never knew about it. He's like, yeah, this is just something else you guys are making up about it. It's essentially my opinion. I think there has to be an action. I don't think there will be. I think the NFL is going to slap him on the wrist. I would like to see 2-game suspension. Just something to say, we don't tolerate this. And, I mean, essentially, this guy, you know, people can say they got to a Super Bowl with this. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, they did get away with it. But if we're looking for, like, a reasonable punishment, I'd say a 2-game suspension, sending the message out. We don't play this. And a hefty fine on Tom Brady, even though a fine, the maximum fine that they can impose, it won't hurt his real bank account.
All good points, Chris, and I agree. I mean, finding Tom Brady would be like finding Floyd Mayweather $10,000. The dude just cleared at least $120 million for his fight with Manny Pacquiao. I mean, it's not gonna I mean, Tom Brady. That's like a tank of gas for us. You know, $500,000 or whatever it would be for Tom Brady. I think if the Patriots weren't playing the Steelers on Thursday Night Football, he would be suspended a game. If they had a Sunday at 4 o'clock game to open up the season, with San Francisco or with Cincinnati, he'd be out for a game. I think for fans to understand what we all need to be reminded of sometimes is, first and foremost, the NFL is a business, and they're in the entertainment industry, and they're about making money. And there's no way on this planet that Tom Brady is going to be suspended for the opening night of the NFL season against the Steelers. That game will draw great ratings anyways, but it's going to draw even more if Tom Brady's behind center. More casual fans are going to tune in because the Super Bowl MVP, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, is going to be taking on one of his rivals in the Steelers on Sunday, in the first game of the year. There's no way in the world Tom Brady's going to be out of that game. Yes, Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount are out. And yes, Le'Veon Bell is a great player, but he's not Tom Brady, and the NFL knows that, and they are going to want Tom Brady to be under center in New England when the Steelers come into town Thursday night to kick off the season. So I think there will be some sort of fine, and I think it's going to be more of the monetary fine. I don't think he's going to miss any games. What they could do is he might be suspended for the preseason. I mean, we've seen that before where guys miss the entire preseason. Again, that's Tom Brady very much, but I think if anything, Patriots might be slapped for draft picks or something like that, or the organization in general might lose some money and or Tom Brady. But in terms of games lost, I don't think number 12 is going to miss a single game in 2015 due to the inflated balls. And another good point you just brought up too, Chris, is that, they beat the Colts, fair and square. I mean, they demolished them, and they actually scored more points in the second half after their footballs were confiscated and they were replaced with the normal sized football. So again, I don't like New England. I do respect them. I do respect Tom Brady. However, I don't think he's going to miss any more games. You do. And I do think we do have a caller. I don't know if we're ready to have them on board, Chris, or.
We're trying to see if we got a caller. We're sorry. We're having some technical problems here.
No problem.
We'll try to get you on as soon as possible.
Sure, no problem. Without further ado, I do want everybody to know that you can call in at 347-850-8581 anytime to join the broadcast. Chris, myself, again, this is What's Hot, the newest Steelers podcast. So we addressed the Tom Brady thing again, as I said. I mean, we'll probably won't miss any games. We'll probably just receive a fine, him and the Patriots. Let's talk about the NFL draft and more specifically the Pittsburgh Steelers NFL draft. The Steelers had a great draft. I mean, I think by all accounts, and Mel Kiper, the astute analyst on ESPN, gave them a nice draft grade. And when we look at it, we knew the Steelers wanted to go heavy with defense. I think this will be more of the second podcast. We need to give Troy Polamalu, Ike Taylor, Brent Keisel, and all those guys that will no longer be Steelers their love. And I think that's going to be more of the next show. So, the Steelers are going to have a young defense. And that's something that I think a lot of fans wanted to see. It's funny because in 2012, the reason why we didn't make the playoffs was because of our offense. We had a stagnant offense in 2012. The defense was number one in the NFL that season. Now, a couple years later, the offense is humming. They're young. With the exclusion of Ben Roethlisberger and Heath Miller, it's a very young offense. And now the defense last year was old, and we needed to tune up, and we have. And, again, we went defense heavy. Six guys from the defensive end were selected in the draft by the Steelers and Kevin Colbert, and only two offensive players in the third round and in the fifth round with Jesse James and Sammy Coates of Penn State and Auburn, respectively. But we start with Bud Dupree. Bud's a thick linebacker, a thick dude from Kentucky. He wore number two because he said he's always chasing number one. And when you look at Dupree, he's fast, he's athletic, he's a physical specimen. And Kevin Colbert said in his post-draft analyst analysis of the draft, he was still excited about the pick of Bud Dupree. I know there's some haters out there that are thinking, man, we drafted a linebacker high in the draft, three of the last 4 years with Jarvis Jones and last year with Brian Shazier and now with Bud Dupree. Maybe we should have addressed cornerback first, but I don't think fans should be upset with Bud Dupree, and I don't think we should be upset about Cinquez Goldson, the cornerback we did get in the second round. Chris, I'd like your breakdown of those two players and what you think they're going to be able to give to the Steelers next year.
So one thing that I looked immediately, when I was looking at Bud Dupree, I often find it hard to go through all the videos of all the players you can possibly pick. But when the Steelers pick, I love it because then I can go back and analyze footage on YouTube or wherever I can get on that player. Bud Dupree is explosive, and that's one thing that we love to see
from our players. That's what we need to see from Hicks. We need someone who gets off the ball with fire and can get after the quarterback, can set the edge, and, you know, put linebackers, start making them backpedal. And that's what Bud Dupree shows. And to be honest, when we were first talking about Bud Dupree and how well he did at the combine and what kind of player he was, you know, I was talking to Neil, you know, and people that, there's no way that we get Bud Dupree. There's just no way he'll drop this. He'll drop down to us. And sure enough, lo and behold, we get him in the first round. I'm of the opinion that cornerback is not necessarily something that we need to draft in the first round because, let's face it, you know, cornerback is so hit or miss, like many positions in the NFL, but it's so hit or miss because our best cornerbacks in the most recent years, they come in later rounds. I said it was a fourth-round draft pick. Richard Sherman for the Seahawks was a fourth-round draft pick. You know, I think you can invest in the corners into the later rounds because that's not necessarily – I think it's harder to judge the top corners and get those guaranteed picks. Whereas when you look at this linebacker, you see he gets off the ball. I think Bud Dupree's biggest weakness, he has to work on his technique. When you look at when he was when they were playing, I believe it was Florida, he was having serious problems with his hands. Big tackles were able to control him more and sort of stunt him and get him out of his pass rushing lane. But as far as his explosiveness and his athleticism, he's a perfect pick for the Steelers. And the hope is that everyone's hoping for is that Joey Porter, the new outside linebacker assistant coach for the Steelers, he's going to be able to work with him, develop those techniques. So that athleticism comes into play. Will it come into play immediately 2015? Probably not. You know, defense is there's a big learning curve for the Steelers. You know, you don't often see people come in and just make splash plays. You know, you had Kendrell Bell back in 2001, but other than that, you know, it's very rare for a Steeler to come in and just smash it and do it great. Trey Polamalu, his first year, he struggled. You know, everyone's like, why did we get this guy? Second year, he blew up.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget that.
A lot of people forget that Troy struggled his first season. That's right.
And as far as Golson, people get on Golson because of his height. But when I looked at his film, I'm looking at a guy. He can high point the ball. He's not just a guy that jumped a route once or twice because he does have a ball magnet. He seems to be able to fly to the ball when it comes his way. He's able to jump on anything. Aggressive tackling. That's something that we absolutely need from our corners. They need to be able to come up, hit and wrap, and bring a ball carrier down because that's something that traditionally in our better defensive years. When we were ranking high, our corners were able to come up, make those plays, and also be able to play zone. He's a zone coverage corner, and I can't express how awesome it is to get a guy that can fit that system already. He may not be tall, but guess what? Brent Grimes isn't tall. There's a lot of corners in this league that have succeeded over the years without being 6'3", 6'2". You know, it is nice to get those tall guys. But like
Rondae Barber, system, I mean, my Tomlin coach, Rondae Barber at Tampa Bay.
Perfect example. So I like the first two picks. When I saw this guy, I was like, oh, okay, I've heard his name. I looked up his film. I was like, oh, I love this. You know, the one thing I want to say to this guy, if you do get an interception, please stop holding it with one hand because we do not want to lose the ball after that. But other than that, I love the first two picks.
He got 10 interceptions. That's one thing I know the Steelers really wanted to focus on was getting playmakers. And that's been kind of a criticism of the Steelers defense the last couple of years. I mean, they're not getting a lot of sacks. I mean, 33 is not atrocious. Terribly low number, but I mean, I was used to in the 90s. I mean, 42 sacks a year was kind of like the. I remember once here when we had 42 sacks, I think it was 95, and I was thinking, man, that's not a very good number. I mean, we were spoiled back then, but I mean, we need to put pressure on the quarterback. I mean, especially looking at the quarterbacks we've got that we're going to have to face this year, assuming that Brady doesn't get suspended, we're going to have to face him, Peyton Manning, we're going to have to face, you know, twice Joe Flacco. Andy Dalton, I know, is in that upper echelon of quarterbacks. He's still a solid Pro Bowl quarterback. We're going to face him a couple times. I mean, we're going to need to put pressure on the quarterback, especially, you know, with the rules as they are now, favoring the offenses, favoring receivers and quarterbacks. We have to have pressure. I love that we drafted Bud Dupree for a couple of reasons. One reason that you mentioned is he's a very solid tackler, so I don't really need to go much further into that. I like the fact he's big. Full disclosure, I graduated from Ohio State. I'm a Buckeye. I love the fact that you got Deron Grant later on. I love Brian Shazier when he was with OSU. I hope he can get healthy. But, I mean, facts are facts. He's not a big dude. He's not. And there was a picture on his Twitter feed not long ago. He still isn't that big. He's gaining more muscle. He looks like a Terminator. I don't know why he's not the next Terminator. He looks like a Terminator. He is
the Terminator.
He is just a brick house. He's a strong dude, but he's not big. He's strong. We need a guy with maybe some more meat on his bones, a bigger kind of guy. And Bud Dupree fits the bill. 6'4", 270. And then when you look at Chickalo from Miami that we picked up later, he was on the line in college, he's going to be a linebacker. Chickalo is a big guy as well. He's in the 6'3", 6'4", range. I've seen him weigh anywhere from 267 to 272. Either way, we got two guys that are going to be around 270 pounds at linebacker. I love that. I already have visions of like LaVon Kirkland, some of those guys. So I love the size that Colbert was able to bring in with Chickalo and bring in, obviously, with Bud, a.k.a. Alvin, his real first name, Dupree.
Right.
And I also like with Bud is that he can get to the quarterback. He had 23.5 sacks in his career. The last 3 years in Kentucky, 6.5, 7, and 7.5. So every year, a little bit more sacks, a little bit more pressure. Actually, when he graduated, he was the SEC's leading active sacker with 23.5. He also can penetrate the backfield. As you mentioned, Chris, he had 23.5 tackles for loss. So this is a guy that is big. He's going to bring a physical LaVon Kirkland-esque presence to this defense. You know, he's good, and Chickalo. And the other thing I like about him is they all, and this is the Steelers in general, you know, it kind of came out with the linebacker with the marijuana situation. His name escapes me now. He was signed by the Broncos.
Randy Gregory.
Gregory was the Cowboys.
Ray, sorry.
Yeah, Ray. Yeah, Gregory was in Dallas, and he obviously had the domestic abuse situation. And I know Shane Ray, I mean, there was a thought we were going to get him. And the situation kind of played itself out because, you know, the Steelers are character guys. I'm not going to say Shane Ray isn't a character guy. We all make mistakes. But there are, from what appears when you read the bios of the players the Steelers drafted, there's no question marks in terms of character. And that's something I know all Steelers fans are happy about. And when you hear about Bud Dupree, and I've seen videos of him on Steelers.com, of each of his video after he got drafted, just seems like a good guy. Seems like a nice dude. And that's also been what people say about Sanquez Golston. And along with what you said, I agree. You know, don't hold the ball like you're holding a loaf of bread. That's what my coaches told me growing up. Secure that football, Sanquez, when you are running with it, hopefully when you get interceptions. But, you know, again, the number that I know Kevin Colbert really liked was he said, you know, a couple times in his press conference, we got 29 picks between the three defensive backs last season. Sanquez Golston had 10. And in the SEC, to get 10 interceptions is no lean feat. And the thing I like about him, and I know, Chris, you know this, the guy played baseball. He was a very prominent baseball player at the prep level. He played for Ole Miss. And he actually got drafted by Boston a couple years ago.
Yep.
So those are the intangibles with Sanquez. But the one thing I'll say about Sanquez, he seems like he's got all the intangibles. I think he's going to make it a splash impact right away. The durability kind of scares me because – and the thing is, when I was watching his video a couple nights ago, there was one specific game, I think it was against A&M. He wasn't really being very cavalier in terms of stepping up and trying to make tackles, but that might be a protection standpoint because was he not that aggressive tackling? Yes. However, he still limited the ball carrier's angle, you know, running pursue or angles because he was obviously filling a gap and allowing other guys to make tackles. And he wasn't getting out of the way, and him not being aggressive didn't elongate any runs or anything. I guess what I'm saying is his inability to really show desire to tackle didn't lead to big gains. It wasn't like, you know, if he got there a little earlier, it was going to prevent something from happening. No. Every time Golston needs to make a tackle, he'll man up and tackle. I think that's more of a precautionary protection move on his end because the guy is 5'9", 176 bills. He should not be spearheading. He shouldn't be playing like Paul Molitor, I guess what I'm trying to say. He needs to protect himself.
Exactly.
So, and, you know, when we look ahead at the rest of the draft, you know, we kind of covered Dupree. I think Dupree's going to be an impact guy right away. And one guy that I hope the Steelers can find a way to replace is James Ferrier. I know we haven't had him for a couple of seasons, but, he's a guy in Ferrier that we, you know, we'll always remember Joey Porter. We'll remember Peasy and the kick celebration he had. And we'll remember LaVon Kirkland. He used to point to the sky. He had that nickname, the Good Reverend Doctor. Greg Wood, obviously, I wasn't hired for my disposition. But we forget about Ferrier. Ferrier was the quarterback of a lot of those great Steelers defenses, and I feel like Lawrence Timmons might become the James Ferrier of this defense because now he is, which is so weird to think that James, you know, or that Lawrence Timmons, not even 29 years old yet, he's the outer statesman of this defense, which is kind of crazy because he wasn't even on the 05 Super Bowl team. That just kind of shows you how time has gone by here. But I'm hoping that somebody can step up and maybe be the Joey Porter of this group if Timmons is going to be see James Fear. You know, maybe Bud Dupree will be the guy that can put pressure on the quarterback, and he'll be that athletic freak at linebacker for the Steelers. But when you look at the rest of the draft, you know, we were able to pick up Jesse James in the fifth round. We were able to pick up Duran Grant in the fourth round, I believe. And Duran Grant, I really like the acquisition of him. We actually got him in the fourth round. And in the third round, we got Sandy Coates. That's the guy I want to talk about with you right now, Chris. And I do want to remind our callers out there that you can call into the show at any time. That's 347-850-8581. Again, that's 340-850-8581. Again, this is What's Hot with Brian Diarno and Chris Carter. We're in the midst of talking about the Steelers draft, and we were specifically talking about Sammy Coates, the newest wide receiver that could come from the laboratory of Kevin Colbert. Say what you want about Kevin Colbert. And I don't know if you agree, Chris, I was absolutely flabbergasted when I saw that he was ranked on an ESPN poll as the 19th best general manager. Are you kidding me? Stoked. The guy's won two Super Bowls.
Stoked. This man, not just won two Super Bowls, but his draft has pulled in some of the best Steelers of all time. Now we could talk about the 70s. Yes, there were some great Steelers. There's a lot of great Steelers that came before. But we're talking about in this unit, this man, he drafted Troy Polamalu. First of all, that right there gets you some hope. He's Ben Roethlisberger, Ike Taylor, who became the – I mean, there's so many great players. And now you're starting to see this new generation of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell coming in. And you're right, in the same token, they won two Super Bowls, went to three in his time being there. And for him to be 19th, I understand there's a lot of people who are, what have you done for me lately? Right, really, when you look at it, you need to look at a whole. What is this? What has he brought to the team? What kind of players did he bring in? What kind of nucleus was maintained since he's been here? And you can't argue about the nucleus. The nucleus was so good that we tried to keep it together for years, and now it started to fall apart. We had 2-8-8 seasons. We have not had a losing season since 2003, which was 3 years after he started, and they were still
rebuilding.
That's
pretty amazing. My cousin is 6 years old, and he doesn't remember a bad Steelers season. That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, if you look it up, we published an article about this last summer. We have the best worst season of any franchise. I don't think we've gone worse than 4-12. And a lot of people, every other franchise has gone 3-13 or worse. Not to say that's a major accomplishment, but it goes to show you that we may be out of it for a year or two. We may not be the best, but guess what? We're going to be in competition with in the NFL every season. We're going to be looking to make moves, and even with the 8-8. The season before this last one, we were one pinky toe from Antonio Brown, amazing play against the Miami Dolphins, from making those playoffs and being 9-7. It wasn't like we were completely non-competitive throughout the season. Yes, we started slow, but we picked it up. I think that it is ridiculous to come at Kevin Colbert and tell him he's not a top. You know, if you want to say not top five, all right. You know, you can say that. I'll still call you a schmuck, but you know, when it comes to it. He's got to be top 10 at least. You know, otherwise, I'm saying you don't know what you're talking about as far as general managers.
Well, yeah, and like you said, it's not easy to replace the guys we had in our team that got us the three Super Bowls, you know, in six seasons and not have a drop-off.
Right.
I mean, how many – you look at New England with Belichick, which, you know, he's had Tom Brady just like we've had Roethlisberger. What other team – has been able to retool and totally just not fall flat on their face and say, okay, we got to pretty much wash the board and totally start over. I mean, look at what, you look at what happened to the New York Giants. Look at the New York Giants after they won their two Super Bowls. I mean, they've had bad seasons ever since. I mean, they've had some 7-9 seasons. They may have had a 6-10 season somewhere in there. You know, the worst Steelers seasons that I can remember since I've, you know, started really following the team back in 93-94 when I was a kid, you know, we were 7-9, 98, 6-10, 99, and then 9-7 the next year. And then the next year after that, we were in the AFC Championship game. And then we were back being a perennial league playoff team and won a Super Bowl, and you know, a couple years after that. So, you know, for what Kevin Colbert's been able to do is, you know, not have much drop-off and being able to replace Pro Bowl caliber guys year in and year out. I mean, you let Antonio Holmes go, you get Mike Wallace as a Pro Bowler. Mike Wallace leaves, Antonio Brown an all-pro and the best wide receiver in the NFL. That's not my opinion. That's Jerry Rice's opinion talking. I'm not going to argue with him. So, you know, when you bring in Sammy Coates, he's like a Martavis Bryant. He's a guy that was a big play threat in college. You know, I believe Bryant only had 81 career catches in college. I mean, Coates has even less, but he had over 900 yards on Auburn's SEC championship team in 13. And this was the number I thought was kind of crazy. He averaged 54 yards, a touchdown reception, in 2013. And he had 14 catches of 30 yards or more. I know he's got some knocks for dropping the ball, but as Kevin Colbert said in his press conference after the draft, you know, AB drops balls, Wheaton drops balls, they all drop balls, but as long as in large, they're making catches and they're making big plays, he'll take the occasional drop. I couldn't agree more. And I've heard and I've read some comments on BTSC from our educated readers that we hope he's not lineman Swede. There's a couple reasons why I don't think he's going to be a lineman Swede. First of all, he's a strong guy. He's, you know, I think around 220 pounds. He's 6'2". He's a physical freak. And a lot of his yards weren't just on big catches. He created a lot of yards from yards after the catch and from knocking down defensive backs. Lyman Swede was not very big, and he never got any bigger. Coates is going to come to the Steelers as a bulky guy and not needing to gain any more weight.
And not just a bulky guy, but a bulky guy that can get off the ball. He can fly. Mm-hmm. That is something that he has. He has speed that can get him down the field. And if you look at his tape, and that's one thing that I always like. You can look at his stats. Yes, he did his drop percentage, blah, 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 blah. Let's look at how he did. When there were several occasions throughout his career where if they threw a deep ball to him, he was going to come down with it. And when he came down with it, if there was no one next to him, he was gone. You weren't catching him. And he just has that burst. So you're right. You can never have, and I believe in this philosophy, you can never have enough good wide receivers to throw to, especially in this new pass-happy NFL. You have Antonio Brown, who is the best receiver pound for pound in the league, right? Two seasons, no one's done it better. Maybe you could say, you know, if we wanted to power rank over the past 5 years, who has the best? Sure, you'll be Jay Megatron. But the past two seasons, no one's outperformed this man. Then you got Martavis Bryant. He's an up-and-comer. His rookie season is very impressive. He caught 8 touchdowns as a rookie, and he didn't even get to play most of that half the season because they said he wasn't game ready. You have Marcus Wheaton, a quickster, a speedster. He's quick. He runs his routes really, really nicely. He looks like a hard worker. I like this guy, number 11. He puts in the work. So you have that trio already. Darius Hayward-Bey, the special teamer, he has the speed on him. Not the best hands in the world, not the best player, but you need that guy that can bridge between this trio right here, and then you have someone before Darius Hayward-Bey. That's why I was like, Sammy Coates. I thought that he would be gone, but hey, let's snag him. And we can talk about whether or not we should have reached for him that early. But my opinion, I think he's a great addition because here's the thing. In our salary cap days of the NFL, it is impossible to keep all your great players, unfortunately. And I just fear that down the line, because we have so many great young players coming up, Hayward, DeCastro, Bell, a player like Wheaton, I don't think we can keep him in 2 years' time. I think that he's going to be a player that we're going to have to be like, we can't, unless you want to
take
a while for
someone like that, right?
Like a Nate Washington. He's a perfect example of just, we love you, buddy, but we can't hold on to you.
Can't keep everyone.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
I totally agree with you, Chris. Yeah. I think one thing I love that Colbert does is that when you read any of these guys' bios, there's always a but. There's always a but. And I think a lot of general managers are just, I think sometimes they go for the home run too much. And to go in baseball terms, they're more like Pedro Alvarez. They're always going for that home run. I know you're at the Pirates team last night. I hope the Pirates can overcome their slow start, which I'm confident they will. But I digress. Back to the Steelers. But, I think the thing I like about Colbert is he'll look at those butts and he'll say, okay, what butt can we work with? What butt is manageable? What butt can I know that with our coaching staff and the players we have and whatnot, after talking to them, you know, what butts are worth the gamble? And I think he always picks – Kevin Colbert always picks good gambles. He always picks good butts. You know, the butt with Bud Dupree is a little bit technique. Okay, I think Joey Porter can work with Bud Dupree. If he's got everything else going for him, he can work with him on technique. You know, with Golston, it might be some ball handling in his sides. Okay, well, Mike Tomlin – also was a secondary coach on the Buccaneers team that won the Super Bowl. So Mike Tomlin knows a little thing or two about cornerbacks. So obviously, if he's confident with what, you know, Golston can do, you know, I'm sold as well. Coates, the thing is, you know, he's got some drops. Again, that's something that you can coach. I mean, I remember Chris Carter no pun intended, Chris Carter, but the Vikings wide receiver Chris Carter had one of the best hands in NFL history, maybe the best hands in NFL history. And I remember him over and over talking about how, you know, he wasn't born with great hands. He worked on it emphatically in the offseason. So did Randy Moss, his teammate in Minnesota. You know, so did Torrey Holt. I know Antonio Brown always works on catching the ball.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry Fitzgerald, who played his college ball at Pitt, you know. All those guys. That's something that you can work on, is getting better at ball handling skills. And, you know, I think as we continue to delve into the Steelers draft on what's hot with Chris Carter and Brian Diardo, I think one of the more safest bet guys that Colbert picked was Deron Grant from OSU, because Deron Grant, I don't think, is going to be a star. I mean, Malcolm Jenkins, who came out of OSU, you knew that guy was going to be a stud. He was a stud in college. He was an All-American with the Buckeyes. You knew he was going to be a star, and he is, with, you know, most of his career has been spent with the Saints. I know he's somewhere else now, still doing his thing. But, you know, Deron Grant's more of the Will Allen, who played on OSU's national championship team back in 2002, and he still is with the Steelers now. Will Allen, just a hard hitter. Deron Grant is like Will Allen, and he's just one of those guys that you want in your secondary, because he's going to be, you know, like to me, I know he was a safety. He reminds me of like a Darren Perry kind of guy or a Deshae Townsend kind of guy. He's never going to be the star of a defense, but he's reliable. He's a solid player, and you know he's going to bring it every game. And he's a good tackler. He's athletic. He actually went to St. Vincent St. Mary's High School with LeBron James, played basketball there, played wide receiver in high school, and was a high school All-American and wide receiver. This is just an overall athlete. He's built already at 200 pounds. Not very tall at 5'10", but, you know, not a short guy. I never watched him play in college and thought, you know, this is a short dude. He is a playmaker, 5 interceptions, and I think overall he's going to be a solid contributor to the Steelers' defense.
I hear you. And I think from what I've seen of him, he's one of the – I've been looking for more highlight tape. Maybe you can show me some, being an Ohio State fan. I'm looking for more tape specifically on him. What I have seen, and the limited things that I have seen, he seems to be able to work with routes very well. He doesn't seem to bite on too many route fakes, and that's something that you really need in a zone defense like the Steelers have used in recent history. Now we do have the changing of Keith Butler from Dick LeBeau, so we may see a completely different look. But in traditional Steelers defenses, you want corners who can remain disciplined, stick to their assignments, and be able to make the actual reads on what the routes are going to be instead of jumping at every move a wide receiver makes. He's pretty fast. He ran a 4.44 in the 40-yard dash, and he's pretty strong with his 21 reps on the bench. So, you know, his athleticism, I don't think that's the thing you had to question. He's another guy. He's 5'10". You know, so Golson's 5'9". They're one thing that's going to hold them back, supposedly, will be there. Can they high point the ball against receivers like A.J. Green, who he will have to go up against if he wants to be successful and be a long-time starter for the Steelers and earn a starting position here? He's been playing it over the years. You're going to have to challenge that guy. You're going to have to go, you know, if we have to go up against a team with a Dez Bryant, those are players you got to win high point balls with. And, you know, maybe he can't. I think he's going to have to prove himself in that format. He's going to be competing against, you know, whereas our secondary isn't loaded with stars. William Gay did lead the league last year in interceptions returned for touchdown, because every time he seemed to touch the ball, it was returned for the touchdown.
He's not the greatest cornerback ever, but to your point, he is an opportunistic cornerback that has made big plays in his career.
Exactly. And he's made plays, and he's not great, but he's solid. He's like, he reminds me of like, maybe not as good as, but he reminds me of someone around the caliber of Deshae Townsend. You know, he wasn't elite, but he got the job done more times than not. And you couldn't lean on him to make your defense better, but if the play was in front of him, he can make it. And he's a player that's just capable of making those plays. And that's what I'd want to see out of Deron Grant and Sanquez Wilson. Just be players that if the play is in front of you, make the play. Make the splash play. That's what Mike Thomas is talking about. We need to make more splash plays on defense. And if you create those turnovers and start getting the offense more opportunities, because I believe the Steelers' offense is about to explode. As if we didn't explode in this past season, I think you're about to see an even more efficient Ben Roethlisberger and an even more exciting receiving core, because I think Martavis Bryant and Marcus Wheaton are going to be so much more dangerous this year. And I sincerely hope that Dree Archer and D'Angelo Williams and Josh Harris, I sincerely hope they can work as a great tandem behind Le'Veon Bell, because Le'Veon Bell, I think, is the best running back in the league. He secures the ball. He's great. He's great on after the pass. He's great. He's great in run protection, and he's great when you put the ball right in his hands to ground with. And so as far as if we can get that offense the ball more and Brandon Graham can help us, that's what I'm looking to see.
I could agree with you more, Chris. And, you know, just again, a quick reprise. We're going to go to 8:30. Initially, we thought we might go half an hour. We are well over that now. So we're going to do 20 more minutes. We're going to wrap up the draft here in a few minutes.
Yep.
The Steelers draft. We'll do a few minutes kind of covering the landscape of the AFC North, their draft. We might get to Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, our guests who we think will have the most successful career in the NFL long term. And we'd like to spend the last 5 or 6 minutes talking about the historical side of the Steelers and talking about maybe some of their top 5 drafts. And also, which we might have to get to next episode, is, you know, we've got some anniversaries coming up this season. The 40th anniversary of Super Bowl X Steelers championship team, the 20th anniversary, which makes me feel really old, of the AFC champion Steelers of 1995, and also the 10-year anniversary, which is really hard to believe, of the 2005 Steelers team that won Super Bowl 40. So we hope we can get all that to you in the next 20 minutes here on What's Hot with Chris Carter and Brian Giardi. But to kind of wrap up the Steelers draft, we discussed the three Golds and Coates and Grant. Let's talk Jesse James and LT Walton. Those guys are green. And Jesse James of Penn State, Mel Kiper, because I was a nerd and watched the entire day 3 of the draft on Saturday, which tells you about my social life. But Kiper said as soon as we drafted James, you know, I don't understand why this kid didn't stay in college. You know, he should have stayed an extra year at Penn State, and he should have spent more time developing his skills with blocking and whatnot. And, yes, Jesse James is not a great run blocker. I watched the tape with him. However, this guy has tangibles that scream Steeler tight end, like space and like Heath Miller. Jesse James is a load. He's 6'7", 254 pounds. You can line him up in the slot, which is what Penn State did a lot. The guy left in only 3 years as a Nittany Lions career touchdown man as a tight end. He had 11. He had 4, three last year, 3 or 4. He had 5 the year before that. So Jesse James has a lot of tangibles that you'd like. And again, you know, he's not going to come in. He's not going to be expected to start. He's just not. I mean, he's in there if we're going to bulk up a tight end, if we want to put a bigger guy in the slot, and if there's injuries to Miller or Spieth. We've got Miller or Spieth. And, you know, really for James, I would look at next year as a redshirt year for him. Next year is his senior year, but he's going to get paid for it. And he's going to learn from Miller. He's going to learn from Spieth. And I think the biggest thing that he needs to focus on is the route running, which he already seems to be pretty good at, but just getting used to fighting off, you know, defensive backs at the NFL level. And obviously, he's going to have to be a good blocker because Steelers, when you look back at Mark Bruner, you know, when you look back at in the 70s, Randy Grossman, I mean, all those guys, tight ends, Steelers tight ends, can block, and that's something Jesse James is going to have to do. But again, I really like the pick. And, you know, Colbert said we knew this was going to be a defensive-heavy draft, but we, you know, if there was an offensive guy that we liked that just came up on our board, we were going to take him if we felt comfortable with the defensive moves that we already made. So, again, I like the move with Coates in the 3rd round, and I like the other move for our other offensive guy, Jesse James. When you look at LT Walton, like James, he's green, too. I mean, he actually played O-line until college and was recruited to play O-line at Central Michigan. When he got there, they were like, let's move you to defensive tackle. And he played great. And every year, he got a little better. And, again, what Kiper said after he got drafted is he is night and day a different player from his rookie season to his last season with the Chippewas. And again, his stats don't really catch your eye, but when you look at his film, he's an aggressive player. He's got a strong motor, and, you know, he's just continuing to evolve as a defensive tackle. And, you know, our defensive line's good, and I like where McClendon's going, and obviously I love Cameron Hayward. He's going to be kind of the new Brett Kiesel of the defensive line. He's going to be kind of the ringleader of that part of the Steelers team. But I didn't think we could afford to not address that position at all in the draft. I didn't think that was a need. You know, obviously, we knew they were going to have to go linebacker, cornerback early in the draft. But I thought it was good that we did decide to, you know, address the defensive line a little bit, just add depth and competition, which is something that Colbert and Tomlin also said they wanted to address this draft, bring more competition in. And I'm glad for those reasons that we brought in Walton.
I agree with you there. I think it's important to address depth, especially when you're talking about as you know, the defensive line. We're gonna need help. We're gonna need as much help. And
as far as you know, I'm not sold on Cam Thomas. I'm sure no Steelers fan is. When you're talking about we need, because you have your starters. I love Stephon too. I love some Cameron Hayward and McClendon, McCullers. You got people that like. I like the way these guys are playing. But you need people to back. You need a rotation. This is the new NFL when people are going to get tired. People are going to run those no huddles. You need players that are going to come in. So if he can come in and fill in and be a guy that can just that can work, that's what I'd like to see. I'll tell you who I really liked as a seventh round pick, Gerard Holloman. Now.
Yes, he's
by no means is he the prospect of this draft. By no means is he going to be the best player from this draft. At least I don't think so. But I'll tell you what, for a guy who put up the numbers he did last year with 14 interceptions, that to get him in the seventh round, that you just spent